have started yesterday. With a little precision, it's not exactly Eastern Europe I'm going to talk about, it's more the eastern part of Central Europe, and I think in a way we are here too in Padua, part of western part of southwestern part of Central Europe. Now, what I would like to say is that it was very revealing to me to listen to all of the previous speakers, because I have not met most of you before. And in a very curious way, they're all coming from different backgrounds. Our arrow of thoughts are directed in the same direction. And let me start with a little bit with my background as a person and as a researcher and activist. We just talked about the 80s with Professor Babiska before the lecture started. And remember, we have some common memories. We participated in joint activities in the 80s. And that was a time when we didn't have visions as young people like you or young researchers, older generation, we didn't have larger visions about the future of Europe and the world. And we have been, many of us, working on these visions. Peace movement, women's movement, ecological, green movements, etc., etc. And it was this kind of civil society networks, movements, were part of the change which has led, part of the change, not the only responsible factor, which has led to 89 and the collapse of a world system, a political world system, which for many seemed to be absolutely untouchable. That was the bipolar logic of the Yalta system. Now, I could give longer talks about it, but this is not my task today. The reason why I mention it is that this time we actually developed new notions, very similar to this value-based approach, what we heard today and yesterday. We were talking about solidarity. In Eastern Central Europe, we did have solidarity notions, the strongest Central European or European working class movement based upon solidarity. We talked about East-West dialogue. We talked about the common Europe based on cooperation and European civil society. The notion of European civil society and global civil society was born out of these discussions. And out of this sudden, in 1991, all these new concepts, new visions, new ideas collapsed or disappeared, almost totally. That's a very interesting for you to think about. And what we got instead was competition between nation states. Mrs. Thatcher came and told us, East and Central Europeans, that there is no alternative. You have to learn what is pain, and maybe you have to cry if it is very painful. The neoliberal dogma overcame. There is no alternative to free market. The free market is going to solve everything. Now, this is the starting point of my talk today. That in the moments of big crisis, like I think we are in the middle or the beginning of a very complex global crisis. It's not only financial, it's not only economic, it's ecological, it's a moral crisis, it's institutional, it's political, and it's demographic and social, etc., etc. It's very difficult to understand, actually, these complexities if you are only listening to what you get in traditional universities, disciplines. Neither economists nor political scientists or sociologists can give you a complex analysis of this. This is one of the problems, and this is what I see here that most of you, most of the speakers, suggest to overcome. That to put the word in intellectual terms, in economic terms, in political terms, into boxes which are separated from each other, is not only a methodological mistake, it is part of the causes of this crisis, in my understanding. What happened in the case of Eastern Central Europe? We were full of hopes concerning joining Europe, we believe that the Poles and the Hungarians are a part of Europe and European history, and it is true, and it is going to happen very soon. We are going to integrate, maybe it will be a little problematic, but it is going to happen anyhow. Now, then came the dogma of neoliberalism, which suggested that let the market do the job. Let us invite multinational companies. They are going to create jobs, and you don't have to do anything. You just go and take the jobs, and everything will be fine. The free market is going to solve all of the problems. I do exaggerate a little bit, because not all of these European countries adopted this ideology, but most of them. Now, the result is the crisis of transition. Although many people were celebrating this transition of Eastern Central Europe to market economy and democracy for a long time, the last 5 years, like last 10 years, even these guys understand that this effort was not at all only successful. So we have to face the crisis of our way of thinking and of our methods and of our institutions, I'm afraid. Now, what is going on? What happened in Hungary? Why in other parts of Eastern Central Europe? Is that what we had was direct, foreign direct investment without any regard of subsidiarity, of interest of local societies, of the larger region, and so on and so forth. And at the same time, we had these beautiful and very appealing slogans and ideology and vocabulary of the European Union about subsidiarity, about cross-border cooperation, about common values. And unfortunately, and this is part of the problem, reality has very, very far, I would say, come from this beautiful phraseology about the social Europe, about cooperation, about de facto solidarity, as Jean Monnet suggests. Now, what happened that we had adopted an ideology which became economic practice. We got multinational companies, and we got this state economic policy which supported what they call the poles of economic growth. That means certain bigger cities, larger cities are developing. All the big multinational companies, Audi and Siemens and others are there, and jobs are created. And as a result, the countryside, the region, emptied out and collapsed. So we have a lot of cities, smaller and bigger settlements, emptied out or just surviving. And what happened in my case, I started my professional career in a university, as a university professor in the countryside, because for some curious reasons I had to understand, coming back from a longer period from the United States, that in 1991, Hungarian institutions were not ready for change. But we were suggesting new methods and interdisciplinary approach, and universities were not ready for change. And this is my second point, that institutions change very slowly. They adopt new slogans, they talk about European cooperation, but de facto, they resist change in their own case. So I started to work in the Western Hungarian countryside in a small city, a medium-sized city, Szombathely, which is almost on the border, and it has a historic relevance. It was the capital of Pannonia Superior, and its Latin Roman name is Samaria. And there I understood this problem, what I'm talking about, concerning emptying out the countryside. And much later, I was approached by IBM. And they asked me, they are known as member of the value sociology group in Hungary, what should we do with the Hungarian labor force? Can the Hungarian labor culture be changed? Because while we have great difficulties, and if things going on like this, we might have to leave the country. And we did a sociological research on the value sociology base and came to the conclusion that the labor force has a strong connection with the development pattern of this social, of this economic policy called neoliberalism, and we need a new model. And I was trying to convince, and this is my third point, trying to convince and still doing so, big investors, multinational companies, and local and regional governments to adopt a new model. A new model of strategic model of investment and development, and which would help to create consistency, social and economic cohesion, instead of supporting certain poles of economic growth and letting others empty. Now, and that led me to the consideration of the role of small and medium-sized cities, because instead of vis-a-vis the typical paradigm of multinational companies who are attracted by mega cities and mega developments and global cities like Shanghai and London and Chicago and Mexico City, I'm suggesting to look at the map. And in Central Europe, Eastern Central Europe, we have this fantastic chain and network of historic cities with fantastic values, mostly hidden or forgotten, fantastic cultural heritage. And when I'm suggesting this, I'm also looking at the literature. And lately, in the last 5 to 10 years, you see a reconsideration of culture. The meaning of culture and cultural heritage has gained prominence vis-a-vis this old materialistic way of thinking. 15, 20 years ago, culture and cultural heritage was something, well, let's remodel the old castle and the temple or the church, and, well, we have to preserve it because it's not a nice thing to not to do so, or abolish them, yeah? take them down because we need investment. Now, we have a completely new approach today, and I completely share this new approach. We need to dig deeper and understand the importance of historic sites, heritage, built and not non-built heritage, from the point of view of social and economic cohesion and future development. The other important issue here is social capital and the link between social capital, relational capital, and cultural capital. So my view here is that we need to invest in innovation, creativity, and creation of new knowledge, because our old institutions are not able to give us, to produce the new knowledge we all need to understand how to change Europe, how to come out of this incredibly deep crisis. And I again looked at the literature, and from here, from Italy, from elsewhere, there are evidences that there is something like territorial capital. So people living in a certain area, in a certain small region, are kind of enhancing the capacity of the local economy, the territorial regional economy, to speed up under certain conditions. The situation is much easier in Emilia Romagna. We have this old tradition of networks and family banks and all kinds of richness, social and economic density, than in Eastern Central Europe. So my suggestion is that we need to invest in cultural heritage and invest in creativity. I'm sure most of you have heard about Charles Lindley, the city making. He believed that cities are complex realities. And in these complex realities, we have a chance to cooperate and to bring up certain push-down knowledge and to become together more successful. So my suggestion is that we have two concrete small and a bigger city close to each other, Köszeg and Szombathely, and to create a city assembly at the border of Hungary and Austria would help to create a knowledge economy based partly upon the creativity of the historic creativity of societies, their religious, what have been not utilized. And so I made a little statistics, because a multinational company would say, but sorry, a city of 12,000 people is not of our interest, or even 90,000 people, it's not interesting for us. But if we add this, and I don't know if you can see the map, these cities are only 15 kilometers from each other, you can see that they are they're growing together, and they are a kind of a regional economy. And it's about 250,000 people. It's a good European little size city. Here is another map, and this is my fourth point, that unfortunately, subsidiarity, regional cross-border cooperation was not a success story the last 10 years. It could have been, it was not. I participated in research initiated by Northern Europe, and Jacques Delors was the head of it. And the question was, 10 years ago, whether the new Europe is inventing itself in its margins. And we look at the French, Italian border region, German, Czech border region, I don't know how many, and then the Hungarian Austrian border region. And we found out that there are some interesting moments and developments, but it's not yet happening. Now here, it would have been very logical. Graz is very close, Vienna is very close, there are two robust economies or regional economies. It would be very easy to join that, but we need certain conditions. We need a new paradigm, a new way of thinking how to develop, you know, how to invest. And here, I think we need a big change, which is not yet occurring. Although, I'm not completely hopeless in that regard. I think crises like this helps people to think in different ways. So even some of the multinational companies, Siemens and IBM, started to develop a new project. They call it Smart City or Green City. Those who are able to think in 25 years terms or 20 years terms, they are understanding that they need a new investment and development, technological development paradigm to come out from the carbon age where we are blocked. Now, cultural heritage, you know, there is an old-fashioned idea that we have to abolish everything that is old. Forget it, just invest in new things. Now, in Kursk, we had a flourishing local economy. Between the two world wars, there were seven water, a small creek. The seven water mills were able to supply with enough energy, electric energy, for the entire city and the micro region. And now it has happened that Siemens decided to invest, and they are going to rebuild this. So instead of just forgetting about all the old stuff, we can together, we can invest in the past in order of the future. I'm not going to show you all of this because I need to conclude soon. What I believe in is a mixture of new postmodern thinking and exploring the past, the combination of two. I'm sure you heard about the creative industries, which is a mixture of old creative activities like architecture, music, etc., and new ones based upon ICT. In places, in countryside, where you don't have the megacity infrastructure, this could be very useful. And I know, I understand that this is happening partly in Italy, in northern Italy. It should come to Eastern Central Europe. Here you can see some of these water mills. Now, to wrap up, I have two short historic stories, two from Kursk and Sommerheim. One is, both are related to Europe, our cultural heritage in plural, and our different values, and maybe common values. One is 1532. 1532, Suleiman the Great decided to launch a big campaign and capture Vienna. They didn't have luck. The huge rain, and they were, you know, all the cattle were gone, etc. And that was a small settlement, then not so small in medieval ages, Kursk said, on the way. And the defender of Kursk, Jurišić Nikola, a Croatian aristocrat, changed his mind instead of joining the slowly emerging Christian army. Typical EU, you know, slow decisions, we don't know, the Spaniards were late, and the Turks were coming closer and closer. He sent a letter to Ferdinand in Vienna suggesting that, His Majesty, I'm trying to stop them, that you have more time to gather. And that was close to a miracle. Even the idea was, it sounded crazy. He had 800 people with the peasants, and the Turkish army had like 90,000 Janissaries. I don't give you the whole story. It lasted for almost a month, and it ended up with a compromise. Now, here is a problem of our thinking. In Hungarian historiography textbooks, we talk about a huge victory against the Ottomans and the Muslims. In fact, the compromise was possible. Everyone died within Kőszeg, of course. Jurisic was half dead when he negotiated with Pasha Ibrahim. And the negotiations finished with a compromise suggesting that you have to put the Turkish flags on the wall. And that moment, I donate the castle back to you, so I do not let the Janissaries to come in and kill everyone living in it. Now, why did it happen? This is the message. It was possible because that was a secret. These two people knew each other. Jurisic was not Hungarian. He served Europe, basically. Yeah? Christian. He didn't even speak Hungarian. The defenders of the castle were German soldiers and Hungarian peasants. Ibrahim was not a Turk. He was a son of Greek slaves. And he did not want to serve completely the military expectations of the Ottoman Empire. And these two people knew each other. They had met 2 years before in Istanbul. Now, why is it important? Because in our university and gymnasium teaching and thinking, it is not intelligible. It's not explainable. But that time, this was a border region, as it is today. A very important historic region. Kőszeg is everywhere in the Gazetti, in the local newspapers, that it happened in Kőszeg that the Ottoman Empire was blocked and stopped. But it was possible also because we had the networks, the medieval Renaissance networks, or the Germans and the Austrians and others who were waging guerrilla wars against the Turks and attacking them. And that time was only 500 years ago, not even. So we have a reality, a historical reality, which is here with us. It is surfacing today. The Kőszeg municipality understood the importance of this fact. They are celebrating this event. They have 1 month, inviting Turks, belly dancers. They are imitating the entire siege. They dress up in that pose. And I don't have now time to show you these pictures, but believe me, it's beautiful. It's very funny. And the importance of this kind of remembrance, recreation of the history, is absolutely vital from the point of view of what I was suggesting to create a historic place which is much more than a small city of 12,000 people. The other story, what we were talking about, that is more recent, is 1944, the Holocaust, and 56. Again, Kőszeg, the border city. Few people know that it happened, and there was Holocaust in Kőszeg for one day, not very long. And it's again, hidden, it's not told. We have a fantastic writer, Agota Kristoff, who died recently. And again, she's a fantastic testimony for multiculturalism. She left Kőszeg with her husband when she was a young lady and went to Switzerland, where she worked in a factory, and she learned French. And she did all her fantastic writing in French, for which she was very furious. She said the French language was better than Hungarian. But she did, and she became world famous in French. And now, the thing is that there's no stories about the Holocaust and 1956. If they are not told, these places are going to lose their significance. If they are told, you know, you have a synagogue in Kőszeg, for example, which I once visited, a small place, and you feel that history has stopped. Because people don't want to remember. that there were 120 Jews in this city, completely integrated in the Christian community, and they've all killed. And so we have a synagogue project. Okay, I'm going to finish here soon. We have a project, which I call the synagogue project, to re-establish the status of Kőszeg and put it back on the world map, as it was in 1532, when the Ottoman Empire was blocked. Leonce was participating in our summer university this year in Kőszeg. After he left, a lady knocked the door and introduced herself that I'm Catherine Henderson from London. I went to talk to Professor Mislevets. I am one of the ancestors of Philip Shea, who built this synagogue in 1853. And we have a huge family network globally, and we are very much interested in helping you to reconstruct this synagogue. Now, here is, again, the story, you know, that history comes back. There are people who would never forget about these traumas, even if the majority of the society is ready to forget. And instead of pushing this down, we should bring it up and show it together with the good part of the history when Christians and Jews were living together in peace in Kőszeg. Now, these are two short stories from a small place. The reason I gave you this in extenso because I believe that culture plays and will play an eminent role in the future of Europe. I hope it will be a future of Europe and European integration. And that it's not an accident that that there are movements like the cultural creatives and other social grassroots movements in which people believe that we have to cut through the old boundaries, whether they be ideological, political, or disciplinary, and we need to look for some common grounds. It could be a common good, for which I think we need social contracts on different levels. Social contracts on the national level, on the European level, and maybe on global level. That means it's a temporary compromise. Maybe we need to sign new social contract in 5 or 10 years again. But if you don't have this feeling of the common good, and we don't have responsibility, as we heard, only rights, then we are going to undermine what we have achieved up until now. Thank you for listening to me.